going to talk about Puerto Rican rites of passage. Doña Rosaena Toroella, who lives in Jacksonville here, is actually from Caguas, Puerto Rico, and is one of the leading exponents of Puerto Rican lace crafts of various varieties. And this sort of stitchery craft is essential for various rites of passage, from those dealing with birth and the inauguration of a new person into the world, through the first communion, through the 15th birthday party or quinceañera, to marriage, particularly with regard to young women's dress. And so now, Doña Rosaena Toroella will talk to you about rites of passage in Puerto Rico. And I think it will start at the very beginning, judging from the prop that she has here. Doña Rosaena.
Gracias. Thank you. Well, yes, it's true. I'm going to start from the very beginning. This is a newborn baby. And when the mother is ready to have the baby, she will get a canastilla as a gift from the family. And there will be all kinds of good things in there for her to take to the hospital with her. There will be a little pillow for the baby. Of course, you don't put this either on or over the baby, or under either. She will have a camisita, which is a little dress, and she will have the little diapers and the booties. Now, this one, I had a pair, but I couldn't find the other one, so I just brought one so you could see it, with the little cap. It's made with the same kind of lace. This is bobbin lace, and it's a set, the little booties and the little cap. This is called a manteleta, which is a little, like a little robe for the baby, so it won't be cold. Remember, babies come from a very warm place into a very cold place, so they need to be warm. So they have a manteleta, and of course, they have the receiving blanket, which will be done in linen, with a little bit of drawn work on the corners. This one says, my baby, mi bebé, and little animals. This one has a peacock on each corner. And the edging is made in bobbin lace also. So you get your baby, you wrap it around, and you're ready to go home. And there it is, your newborn baby. Now, in the basket, there's all the things that go in the basket, but they have nothing to do with needlework, like baby lotion and the little brush to brush the baby's hair and things like that. All those things are in there, but really you don't have to. I don't have to talk about that because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about needlework. And this is what you do when the baby is ready. You may have the baby.
No, thanks.
So the baby grows, and you send out a little notice that the baby has been born. And after the baby grows for about 6 months, you send out an invitation that there's going to be a christening. And this one happened to be mine. And it tells you the date that I was born at. And then when the christening is going to take place, where and who the godparents are, etc. And then you take your baby to church. And here he is. He's 6 months old already. And he's wearing his christening gown. And you do the little cap again. This one is done in Richelieu. That's a handmade lace. and the little booties, and this I have the two of them. And they're made in the same kind of lace. And this is a tape lace. See, you see the tape here? And it's put together with little spiders. And it was established by the Cardinal Richelieu. He had a school in France. And he taught boys. Boys were the ones that made this kind of lace. Now, since what I had was a boy, I didn't make roses or little flowers or anything for his christening gown. I made butterflies, and they're made of Tenerife lace, which is another kind of needle lace. And here's some bobbin lace and drone work here. You take the baby, and you remove the little cap from the baby, if I can do that. And then they pour the water, and then you dry the baby. So you have a nice little sort of handkerchief to dry the baby. You put the cap back on. And you take the baby home, and you have a big party. No babies in the party, just grown-ups in the christening party. At that time, the baby is given a little medal. I'm going to pass this around. That's the christening outfit, if you want to look at it. The baby is given a spoon, and I can't find the spoon. I'm sure I put it here. Thank you. Well, so you can feed the baby. Don't let it die of starvation. And that's the second rite of passage, the christening. And then comes the third one. And that's the Holy Communion. In Puerto Rico, most of us are Catholic, so those are the parts. And I didn't bring the dress because it's too big, but if you go over there, it's right there on display. And it's usually white. No, it's always white. You have to wear a little veil, a little pouch, and then you have your handkerchief, your rosary, and your invitation also to your first Holy Communion. And this is mine also. And it took place the 3rd of June of 1943. So it's almost 60 years since I made my first Holy Communion. And I've been a good girl ever since. I promise. So now, you're carrying the baby around, and before there were Pampers, there were diapers. So you had to have something to carry your diapers in. So this is what you did. When you went to school, you had to learn how to do drone work. This was learned in school. So you did all these little things at school, and you had them ready when you got married and you had your babies. You had all these things done. And you put your diapers in here, and you carried this around. And so this was BP, before Pampers. Nobody uses this anymore. No. It's a pity because it's so beautiful. So then the baby grows up. Now, mine is a boy, so he's not going to grow up to be a quinceañera, but my niece did. And I brought her dress. It's over there also. It's too big to carry around. But when the quinceañera comes around, you send an invitation for the quinceañera party. And this is mine also. This is my quinceañera. And it tells here that I'm inviting to a party. Now, the quinceañera is a huge party. It's the dress is almost like a wedding gown. And there's an orchestra. And people come all dressed up and everything. But I was always a little different. And I decided that I didn't want a quinceañera. I had a small party. And the money they were going to spend on my quinceañera, I wanted because I wanted to go to Europe. So for my 15th birthday, I went to Europe. But imagine, my parents couldn't think that I had turned 15 and I didn't have a party. So I got a party also. So at 15, I got several things. I got a set of bobbins for my bobbin lace. I got a thimble that all my I had my grandmother's, my great-grandmother's, my mother's, and my own in a little box there that you can see. And I got a handkerchief. Now, the one I brought here is my sister's because it has her initials here. My grandmother embroidered her initials. When I turned 15, she couldn't see too well. She didn't embroider my initials. So I always told her that she loved my sister more than she loved me because... So I don't have a quinceañera dress of my own because I went to Europe, which I will take with me when I die, and the quinceañera dress stays behind. So I'm very happy I didn't. So, well, time goes on, and you're ready to get married. So you get yourself ready, and you buy a lot of things. I'm making a set of pillowcases for one of my nieces that's getting married in August. I have one already, and I'm making the edge in bobbin lace, and that goes with her trousseau. And most of the things, even the slip, is made handmade with bobbin lace. So that's how it goes. Now, I have here my mother's wedding handkerchief. It's made of crepe de chine and brooch lace. And it's very delicate and it's coming apart. My mother got married in 1926, so it's a little bit old. My mother made this one for me when I got married. And it's a little bit old also, but I'm not saying. And I brought my sister's wedding dress that's there. She had a huge wedding. I got married in Italy and I wore a suit, so I don't have a wedding dress either, so I'm different. Oh, I found the spoon. And no, it's not broken, it's like that. And you feed the baby this way. So, yeah. Yeah. And this is what I wore. This is my mantilla. And you wore it on top of a peineta. This is a peineta. You have to have long hair, and I used to have really long hair. Remember the beehives? That was the time, the 60s. So I had my beehive, and I put my peineta there, the mantilla on top. And the mantilla you pin down with flowers. And it stays in place, otherwise the wind will blow it away. So this is what you do. And this is a picture of my sister with her wedding dress, and that's the one that's over there. It was white, but through time it turned yellow, and now it's golden. So it has a nice patina, and it's really nice. So I was going to bring a shroud, but I didn't get it in the mail on time, but it's used. It's like a robe that you put on top of the dead person, and it has tucks and a little bit of embroidery here with a nice edge in bobbin lace, and it has a hood. And then the person has the hands folded, and on her hands or his hands, it's his or her rosary. And that's the way they're buried. And it's called una mortaja in Spanish, and it's the shroud in English. And that goes, and the person is buried with that. That's the only thing you can take with you. Your rosary and your mortaja. The rest stays behind, and I'm taking my trip with me. And the only thing I had that I wore is this. This is my Christian gown. So those are the rites of passage in Puerto Rico. And you're welcome to visit me over there so you can see the rest of the things I had there. And if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer. No questions? No? Okay. Men? Okay, men, yes, they do. The Christian gown that I have here is my son's. I have over there, I have a little romper that I made for him when he was growing up. I have his first communion suit. It's a long, long trousers, and it's a nice, it's made of linen, and it's just white. And when he turns 15, he wears a tuxedo. But nobody does that. They just go on. they go to a place where they rent them. And then when they get married, they go and rent another one. If they're filthy rich, they will have one made for them. But we're not filthy rich. We're not even rich, so we rented them. And then when they die, they can have a mortaja if they want to, or they will be buried in a nice suit. And yes, that's the way it goes. No, they don't. They don't, but they go to the girls' parties. They usually, what happens is usually there's a big party for all the boys and girls that are turning 15, and they all go to that party, you know, they all go to that party. And usually, since we're from a small town, this girl is going with that boy, and they're the same age, so, you know, they share. So that's, yeah, but boys don't have a special party. But I'm telling you, if you have ever been to Puerto Rico, we have an ongoing party all year round. We party. We know how to party. And if you're born Puerto Rican, you dance. So we always have dances. So, you know.
Friday night party?
Oh, gosh. Everywhere. No.
Yeah, they're going to find the old boyfriend.
No, 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 you're wrong. No, but we do have parties all year round. We always have an excuse for a party. And sometimes if we don't have an excuse, we just party the same. So no excuse needed. And we love to dance also, and most of us dance. Sometimes you find somebody that has two left foot. No, usually you make it yourself and you have it ready. The same way you get your your trousseau ready, you get your. Now, since I'm going to be cremated and I already have that down, I don't have a shroud. I'm not going to burn good linen. Yeah, but yes, I have. One of my cousins have hers, and she sent it in the mail, and I didn't get it on time. Probably I'll get it Tuesday. Because tomorrow is a holiday, so there's no mail tomorrow. So probably we'll arrive Tuesday, and it's going to be too late. But I wanted to have from birth all the way to death, and I didn't get there on time. But, yes, it's really very simple. It's like a robe with this tux here, and there's some embroidery and very nice bobbin lace edge. And then there's the hood. The hood is very simple also. And hands crossed and the rosary here, and that's it.
Would that be in white or black?
White.
In white?
White.
And this would be for men and women?
Men and women. And you can see that everything through, from birth through death, everything is white. Everything is white. The receiving blanket and the little camisita that the baby gets is white. The christening gown is white. The first communion is white. The quinceañera is white. The wedding dress is white. And the mortaja is white. So everything is white.
Mm-hmm. Now, for a gentleman, then it would be a relative who would make that mortaja?
Usually it's the wife.
We're talking about the death shroud here.
Hmm? Usually it's the wife. Let's get it done. Let's get rid of him. Usually she makes both. But, you know, we have people in Puerto Rico that knows how to make lace. They make lace, and I'm sorry, since I wasn't going to be doing lace here, basically, I didn't bring, but I have a lot of articles that with the lace makers of Puerto Rico, and men make lace in Puerto Rico. They know how to make lace. They know how to embroider. And it used to be that they made gloves to send to the States to sell. So yes, there's always been a cottage industry there where men do work there and do those things. Yeah.
Do you think this is for a recent thing that because they can be sold?
Well,
or do you think that this is part of the tradition that men are also capable?
Men used to do a lot of things. Now, there's a long tradition of men making lace. And if you go back to the history of lace, you will find that, for instance, in Italy, the Gobellini brothers used to do all the petit point, that's a half cross stitch, and they made these huge wall hangings. Now they're worth trillions, but they were made by the Gobellini brothers in their workshops, and all the people that worked there, all the workers were boys that were there as apprentices. And they did their apprenticeship there, and they learned how to do it. They went and established their own workshops, and it went on like that, and they were all boys. The same thing with knitting in England. The master knitter had the apprentice, and the boys were like six when they started. They went through a long apprenticeship. Then they went on to do, let's say, graduate work, and then they went on to be master knitters, and there were boys. And as I told you, Richelieu, he established an academy in France, and there were boys. All the boys were doing all the lace. So, you know, that's that. And in Ireland, boys were the ones that were making the Irish lace. But then we girls found out that we could do it better, and we just kicked them out, and now it's us. And, you know, it's happening everywhere. So, men, beware. We're here.
Well, here's a question. Some of the various laces that you showed on the rites of passage garments seem to come from different places or different times in history. For example, you mentioned something that was in a Tenerife style. Wasn't this here?
Yes.
The butterflies?
Yes.
What is that Tenerife style? Tenerife is one of the two main islands in the Canary Islands, which contributed some of the population to Puerto Rico and is known for a certain type of needlework called calado. But how about this?
Well, and the Tenerife lace is a needle lace, and when you're doing calado, like she says, and you pull all the threads, what happens to the corner? You get a hole. You get a hole in there. Now, if you do this and you leave a hole here, it's not going to be very attractive. So they start thinking, well, what are we going to do about that? So they start going back and forth with different threads until they made sort of a mesh, and then they start weaving back and forth, until they made a little design. You can see that design there? Well, that's the same thing I did here, but I did this on purpose, just this. Mm-hmm. See? And that came out of necessity to fill out that hole.
Uh-huh.
And then they took it out and made it a lace on its own. Now, if you're going to make Tenerife lace, you need a loom. And if you're going to make a triangle, of course, you need a triangular loom. If you're going to make a round one, and all you do is you make, let's say, a round one. You make a circle, you make it in wood, and you put nails in there, space like every quarter of an inch or every inch, depending on how wide or how small you want to do it. And then you just thread your needles like that, your threads like that. And when you have them all around, then you go to the center and you start weaving. When you have around a little thing like this, see this thing here? Then you can go to the sides and start going up and down, going up, and then you make different designs. You can make leaves, you can make pinwheels, you can make whatever you want to. I decided to make butterflies. You can make whatever you want to.
So,
but that's the way you have a hole that you you don't want it to be a hole anymore.
So that's with the calado in the corners, right?
Yeah.
But how about
this? This is the calado. This is the calado.
Right.
And this is the Tenerife that you fill in the hole.
Okay.
Because here you have threads going this way that you're going to bunch together. These are just the threads that you bunch together. And depending on how you bunch them together, you get different designs.
Uh-huh.
But they're just the threads that are this and here. So you pull them all out this way, and you just get the others like that. And then you do the same thing here, but once you pull this one here, you have nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want that to happen.
Right. Well, then you also showed the ribbon lace, and then you talked about the bobbin lace, which you have a demonstration of there.
Okay, the one we do most in Puerto Rico and the one we are famous for is bobbin lace. And there's a cottage industry going on right now in Puerto Rico. If you go there, you go to Moca and Camuy and all the those little towns in the center of the island. And there's ladies there doing bobbin lace, and I mean fast. And you can hear the bobbins going clack, 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 clack. You can hear it from afar. And they will be doing all kinds of things. And I have, I'm sorry I didn't bring those things. I have an article where one of those ladies made a blouse in bobbin lace for Barbara Bush. And she has her picture with Mrs. Bush, and Mrs. Bush is wearing the blouse. And
had to be a big
yes.
one.
Yes. Oh, yes.
A lot of
so
work.
Yeah. So you know, it's and it's still going on, and you can still go there and see them working with their bobbin lace, and this we got from Spain. Of course, it came to us through Spain, and Spain got it from Flanders, the Low Countries, which is where we think bobbin lace started, and. Flanders was part of the Spanish empire way back in the 1500s, and if you remember Charles V, you know who Charles V is? He was the Roman emperor. He was the fifth, but he was Charles I of Spain, and he came from Flanders. And when he came from Flanders, he brought in a lot of his lace makers because, you know, they used lace bags, and men and women and everybody used lace. He brought all his lace makers with him, and they got themselves established in Spain, and they got the people in Spain learning how to make lace, and that's how we got it in Puerto Rico, through the Spanish that came to Puerto Rico, and they got it from the Flemish artists that came there. And they were the ones that really started this thing of making lace.
Yeah, I want you to see, if you haven't, how many bobbins. There are dozens of bobbins, each one with its little thread. And all those little threads are somehow integrated into a pattern. It's very complicated. Now, how about this ribbon lace? You said that this was done by boys, but how about the origins of that?
Well, it started in France. They had all this tape, and they wanted to do something with it, because you know when the tape was made in bobbin lace originally. So maybe when you, I don't know. I don't do that. I get people working on a piece of lace immediately. But when girls were started, they were made to make miles of tape, because the tension had to be right, and this had to be right, and the other thing had to be right. Of course, they didn't have an option. They had to do it. But it was boring. So they made all this enormous amount of tape. So they weren't ready to throw that away. So they started piecing it together, and they got this kind of lace.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your family originally from Spain?
Yes.
And is this it is not only a general tradition, but a family tradition case.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And I save everything. So I have everything that was from my great-grandmother, so my my grandmother, my mother, myself. I have no daughters, so I don't know what I'm going to do with them.
Got a niece?
I have nieces. They don't want them because they don't sew. They don't make lace. Oh, that's my secret.
Well, this is something for a museum, perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps. So that many, many people can appreciate it.
Yeah.
You can see that it does yellow with time. And so this is a sort of artifact that has to be very carefully preserved. Because if you could see, some of her early things are actually yellowed with time. And so to conserve textiles is very difficult where we have some ancient textiles is, for example, from the coast of Peru, from pre-Columbian times, because it's so dry there. But in the tropics, and Puerto Rico is subtropical as well, just like here, it's subtropical, things do deteriorate. And so I think a museum...
And insects, we have insects. You name them, they're there. All kinds of insects. So if you look at these things, oh my God, there's a hole. I wonder which one got into it. And it's a fact of life.
Now, Doña Rosena, do you continue doing this?
Yes.
Is this a job or a hobby for you?
It's a hobby. No, it's a crusade. I don't want this to vanish. So I'm trying to get as many interested as possible, and I'm trying to get somebody to be my apprentice. So maybe that person could have my bobbins and my mundillos and things like that, because I don't know who's gonna get them. And I'm not getting younger. So, I'm almost 70 already, so how long do I have to live? I need somebody! Somebody!
This is true for many, many types of traditional crafts.
Yes, I would like to have somebody that comes and learns how to make bobbin lace and that will be able to carry on. And I have a lot of things I have to do with bobbin lace, and I have a lot of books on history of lace and things like that. And well, they either go to the, my son says, you know, I have a huge collection of demitasse. I mean huge. I have almost 600 of them. I have 593 to be exact. My son says that he's going to put up a sign when I pass away. He's going to put up a sign that says, cups for free, come get them. So, first he was going to charge 25 cents a piece, but then he decided that nobody was going to want them, so he was going to give them away.
Actually,
so, you know.
I saw this in a family near Toronto, Canada, that an older aunt passed away, and everyone that came to pay the respects to the house, if they wished, they could take the cup that they liked best that they had had tea in. With her, and so each friend of hers took one.
I don't have 593 friends having tea with me.
But well, now you have some more, thanks to your presentation today.
Yes.
So thank you, Doña Rosena Coruella. And please join her if you wish later on in the